This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Jared Bowen. As a nation, we've been talking a lot about Dr. Martin Luther King recently, especially with yesterday's inaugural festivities that quite symbolically fell on Martin Luther King Day. Dr. King and his fight for civil rights likely played a huge role in paving President Obama's path to the White House. But the pressures the slain civil rights leader felt of being the face of the civil rights movement is the subject of the play The Mountaintop, presented by the Underground Railway Theater and now on stage at Central Square Theater in Cambridge. Joining me in Studio 3 to talk about the show are actor Maurice Parent. He stars as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and actor Cammie Smith, who plays Kameh, a maid at the Lorraine Motel, where we find Dr. King spending his final evening. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So you must feel this extra weight to be doing this play. I mean, obviously, I'm sure it's programmed in time for the inaugural festivities and Martin Luther King Day, but do you feel any extra weight when you're stepping on stage, especially in the last couple of days, to bring his likeness, to bring his sensibilities, and of course his legacy to the stage?
Well, actually, it's interesting. During the rehearsal process, our director Megan Sambarzakian and I talked about it, that it's not an impersonation of Dr. King, but more trying to be a channel, and not to sound too, you know, too esoteric here, but just trying to be a vessel for this story and for people connecting with who Dr. King means to their life. So especially, it was really palpable the last few days, thinking the day we celebrate, you know, his life, and we did a presentation at a church. So I got to do a long speech in the, not giving too much away, but I do a long speech in the piece, and I got to perform that in a church, you know, and you could really just feel the spirit and kind of the energy around what we're doing. And then we performed at BU, which he went to. So, again, just trying to be a channel to that energy and hopefully bring Dr. King to the minds of everyone that's watching. So it's less of a weight, but more of like an honor or duty. Oh, God. That sounded like...
Cammie, I'll let you bring him back to back down to... No, that was true.
My head has to squeeze back into the earphones now.
But audiences are so often, you know, a presence in and of themselves in the theater. So in the last couple of days, it's sort of the same question. Have you felt that? I mean, what's it meant to you to be doing this at this time?
It's such a special experience to be able to kind of communicate with people around this time. And what we found, like Maurice said, we've been doing a number of community events, and it's really such a great way for us. You know, we've been sitting in a room for so long and talking about these themes and listening to speeches. So to really hear it in action for people who are actually going out there and passing on the baton and are being active in their communities and just opening the dialogue, I think it's, for me, it really feels like we're trying to be on the path to accomplishing so much of what he was talking about. So it's incredibly gratifying, and it's really, for me, I don't know about Maurice, but it's totally the reason why I love doing theater and why I think it's so vital and important that we keep telling these stories.
Well, let's talk about what some of the subject matter is. The play takes place, it just all happens in one night. It's April 3rd, 1968, room 306 at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, where Dr. King spent his last evening after giving his mountaintop speech, which we'll talk about in a second. But it's sort of a fictional portrait. It is and it isn't. So, Maurice, where does this take us? I mean, where does this – what entry point do we have for Dr. King here?
So that's a great question. And it kind of goes in with my preparation for the role and what I'm still working on every time I go on stage, is that we start with knowing what's publicly known about Dr. King. You know, he came to Memphis to join the sanitation workers' strike. He gave the mountaintop speech. What is actually known is that he originally didn't want to go down to the Mason Temple. He was depressed about some other issues around the march, so he wasn't going to get out of bed. And Ralph Abernathy called him up and said, "You have to come down. These people really want to see you." And he had a speech prepared, but then veered off and said he may not get to the promised land, but I've been to the mountaintop, and it's okay. So I think what playwright Katori Hall went from there is just thinking what his mentality might have been when he's away from the public, when he's just all by himself. And the beauty of this play is just him and this woman. You know, no one else is around. you get a chance to see what he might actually say if he knew he was in a completely safe space with no one listening. Because people are always listening. The FBI was always listening. There were so many instances of them finding bugs. Even in churches, while they were preaching, they would find bugs underneath the pulpits, and they'd pull them out and start talking to them directly. And, you know, so there was always someone listening wherever he went. But the idea of Dr. King alone with no one listening and one person who he quickly learns to absolutely trust. What would he say? What would he be like? What are the things he would admit?
And then, Cammie, this is where you enter. As I mentioned, you play this maid who starts to interact with Dr. King. Initially, she enters a hotel room just to bring him coffee. But we realize that there's much more to her. There's a big twist in the play, which the theater has asked that I not divulge, and I'm happy to comply because I think it's a great thing for audiences to experience it without going in being more aware than they necessarily should be. But what do you see the maid, Kameh, what's her role in getting in teasing out of Dr. King, you know, sort of this despair that he's feeling at this moment and just where he is in his life?
Well, I think that's the thing that's really fascinating about this play, because so often you see Dr. King and speaking with the press or speaking with presidents or accepting the Nobel Peace Prize and being able to have a picture of him just interacting with a normal person that's just living their lives, that's just, you know, Joe Schmo going blue collar girl, you know, I think is really exciting and getting to hear him be challenged on his ideas. I mean, now in this day and age, we give him accolades, but that was certainly not the case at the time.
Yeah. What are some of her nuances in terms of where does she sort of take him down a few pegs?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, my character, Kameh, she's definitely young and kind of fiery. So from her perspective, things aren't moving fast enough. So I have a line that says, walking will only get you so far. So really, she's in the mind of progress and kind of more on the path of maybe the Black Power movement, maybe more on the path of violence and resistance in that manner, as opposed to taking this nonviolent approach that in her eyes has been unsuccessful.
I mean, this really is, I hate the cliche, but I'm going to use it here. It's sort of warts and all portrait of Dr. King. Yeah. I mean, everything from the fact that he has smelly feet to it suggests his philandering that we've since come to learn. So how do you guys look at that in terms of, I mean, we're really pulling him out of the monument, so to speak, that was just unveiled in Washington, D.C. not too long ago, this towering figure that for so long nobody could really touch. But here, you see everything. You see that he was a real guy. You see that he had failings and he faltered.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that we talked about in rehearsal is that I think we do him a disservice when we deify him, because that's something he never wanted. He always saw himself as he went to great lengths to say that he was amongst the people. And he, in several speeches, said, "I'm a sinner just like everyone else. Don't leave here thinking Dr. King or saying that Dr. King is a saint. I'm a sinner just like everyone else, but I'm trying to be a better man. My heart is right. Is your heart right? That's what counts." And I think we actually do him disservice, because if you put a human up to that level, he's almost at, you know, the level of, you know, whatever God or whatever, the universe, whoever, he's almost up there. He's deified. So if you put him up there, then his efforts and all the things he's accomplished become unattainable as well. So not that everyone us should be the next Dr. King. That's impossible. But each one of us should strive to work as hard for something we're passionate about or we really believe in as hard as he did and commit your life to it. So,
when you're approaching a figure who, again, this is very fictional, but he's a biographical figure, so there's something that you're going to be compared to. There's something that you also have to pay attention to. And I can ask this of both of you when you're portraying Dr. King, because Cammie, you get up there at one point and you deliver a fiery speech just as Dr. King would. What is your process in terms of how you both decided that you would depict him?
Sure. Well, I guess I'll go first. I decided to focus my research on that period of his life, because it's such a fascinating period of his life. The last year, basically beginning with the Vietnam speech he gave, when he came out strongly against the war in Vietnam, he went from being he was already starting to be questioned about his motives, but then he became a lot of people turned their backs on him. The federal government, a lot of people in the movement, a lot of people. It wasn't quite as popular to be critical of the war at that time. But he saw, like you said, this triple evils. He saw poverty, militarism, and racism being united. And that's like the force of evil in our nation. If you started tracking one, which he was focused on racism, the other two just fill in the blanks. So you have to tack them all. So we saw them all as interrelated. So I focused all my research on that. And
let me just stop for a second. And because we have many of his archives right here at Boston University and that great archival research center, did you actually pore through documents? I mean, how did you do some of your research?
Well, I didn't, but I focused on here's this epic Taylor Branch three-book, you know, manifesto almost of Dr. King's America in the Dr. King years, and I focused on the last one. And my poor attention span, I teach kids, so I have I think I've inherited their attention span by, you know, just interaction. So I had to get the audio book so I could be doing other things, listening, like jogging. I'm like, oh, that was interesting. So I did that. I listened to tons of speeches, and I read articles, and we found a very interesting article about one of his ex-lovers. You know, she's writing a book about something she wrote. So just try to put my mind in the mindset wrap my mind around his mindset about how scared he was and how, speaking of the Black Power movement, at this time people were starting to see nonviolent and Dr. King as like a church boy thing or like passe, but what's current today is Black Power and Stokely Carmichael and things like that and the Meredith March, Stokely Carmichael saying Black Power and Dr. King not knowing what to deal with that. So at
was
that
it,
moment.
What about the his actual voice and cadence? Mm-hmm. Was it important to you? I was curious about this because I was wondering if it was important to you to get that right or is it something, as you said when you opened it, you don't want to actually mimic him
yeah.
and you don't want to just be a Xerox copy because you want to have a fleshed mm-hmm. out character. So how did you decide what voice you would have?
Sure, yeah. After I did all the research, the next step was to look at the play and say, okay, that's Dr. King in the real world, but and then what is the Dr. King in this play that Couturier has written. Because ultimately I'm playing a character and that played into the voice. You know, there's not a lot of recordings of him speaking, interacting on a one-to-one private basis. Everything is speechifying or there's some interviews. So trying to listen to that and then with my imagination and the joy of acting, if you want to say that. Well, my head is so large right now. I don't think I'm walking out of this room. But with my imagination, thinking like, well, okay, if this is how he spoke in public, how might it have been? How much of that will bleed into a regular conversation? And Liz Hayes is this wonderful actress and a speech person, so she helped us a lot with that. And we just kind of crafted how he might sound when he's giving a speech, but then how he might sound one-on-one.
We're talking about The Mountaintop, a new play at Central Square Theater, all about Martin Luther King's last night at the Lorraine Motel. We're talking to its stars, Maurice Parent and Cammy Smith. Cammy, as I mentioned just a moment ago, you also have this fight. You hop on the bed. You give this fiery speech. So I'm wondering what specifically you looked at in Martin Luther King's history, because of course you do have the benefit of seeing all of his speeches, see how he behaved and what the character, you know, sort of the mannerisms and whatnot. So what did you take from that? What did inform your portrayal?
Sure. So I also watched a lot of speeches. We read a lot of information, his books and all of that. But in addition to that, I'm actually originally from Mississippi. So a lot of my research was trying to figure out what were the regular people in that era, kind of where were their minds? What were they thinking? So I spoke a lot with my parents. They're both, you know, pretty politically active surrounding that time period. And my grandparents and tried to get a good idea. And specifically for that speech, what I did a lot of is, I mean, I'm from Mississippi. I grew up in the Baptist church. So I channeled a lot of that coming in. I watched a lot of sermons on YouTube. I tried to kind of make it kind of it was kind of a collection of every Baptist preacher I've ever seen in my life, basically.
And it's brilliant. As like a Catholic watching that, I was like, wow, it teaches me something.
You know, I mean, once you've seen a Baptist preacher, it never is erased from your mind. So, so that was a lot of what I did in addition to really trying to pinpoint what was going on with Dr. King at the time and have an understanding of that as well.
You two have such, right here, you have great chemistry. In the show, you have even more chemistry. How do you get that? Did you spend a lot of time before the show? Are you spending a lot of time together now?
We all drink before each show. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Absolutely kidding. Megan, I'm kidding. So, no, well, we've worked together before.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been friends for a while.
Yeah, and I mean, definitely during the rehearsal process, you know, we got even closer. When it's a two-person show, it's, you know, every day, every rehearsal, every show, you got to be right there with mm-hmm. each other. And, you know, you find yourself, oh, let's go get sushi after. And,
yeah.
You know, so yeah, it just develops into just you know, once you kind of feel those emotions on stage, you really kind of connect with the other person.
And I'll take this moment to thank, because Cammy, I remember one of the first things you said was, I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. We're playing this two-person play, you know, Dr. King. And she grabbed my hand and said, you know what, Maurice, we are going to get through this together. And I was like, that's just how you started off. That was just so great.
So that's nice. I mean, is chemistry often organic like that, or do you have to work at it? Because I know that I have talked to people who realize right away it's not going to work. Has that been your experience? And then what happens?
For me, I think it's about trust. I feel like that's a lot of it, that you know you're in the room with the other person, and kind of if you can allow yourself to trust the other person, then it might become a little easier. And especially, I think we have a lot of trust also in our director, Megan Sandberg-Zakian. She is a champ and
totally.
A big believer in kind of building those connections and making sure that we're able to have those dialogues as well.
So where did you come in about Martin Luther King? I was thinking about this because you're obviously of a much different generation. I know you're both close to your Cammy. You're in your 20s. Maurice, you're close to your 20s, as was the playwright when she wrote this. So you have a very different approach, I'm sure, because you not only have sort of the experience of seeing everything on television and what you read in your textbooks, but you also know, as we were talking about before, he was a very nuanced person. He had his failings. So how do you guys look at what his legacy is, especially, again, given that we've been considering it so much in the last couple of days?
I came into it knowing the basics, like everyone else. You know, I have a dream. You know, I have a dream, and, you know, he wanted unity and love and things like that. And I'm ashamed to say that that's pretty much where it ended. And then we actually had a talk back with some preachers that was thinking that most people think, Dr. King, I have a dream. They think that's the beginning of what he had to say. And when I started cracking those books, it actually, I mean, again, don't want the head to get too big, but it's actually changing me as a person. And it's so gratifying to be part of an artistic process that you can say that I'm walking away with something that's changed Maurice, not just, you know, my acting credits or experience, but I feel change because he was so radical in the last part of his, particularly in the last part of his life. I mean, you know, marches aside, you know, tear gas and singing "We Shall Overcome" while people throwing tear gas aside, when he came out against the war and was basically saying that it's poverty we have to target and militarism and, like I said, and already hate and racism, basically a lot of what he did was almost like Occupy. You know, like he wanted to occupy the Washington Mall with people for the Poor People's Campaign. And just when you wrap your head around that, it's really my takeaway is that he really, truly loved, and it's more than just a passionate hug. Let's all get it out. It's like everyone has to value and respect each other on all levels.
Cammy, what about you?
Well, I, you know, as I mentioned, I'm from Mississippi, so my parents were very much, you know, I grew up reading the books, and, you know, but again, it was very kind of a ballpark approximation of what Dr. King did and really what he accomplished, and really in doing this play, very similar to Maurice, it's really a game changer for me. I mean, in seeing really what a radical guy he was. I mean, he was, for the time, he was really out there. So learning about that and also just learning just what a huge heart and what a capacity to love that he had is really just such an example to us all. And I just feel very honored to be a part of it.
And it's all heightened by the fact that you're looking at him the final night and you know that there's just this terrible poignancy, which you'll see it in the show, but he almost realizes. We've been talking about the play The Mountaintop. I've been speaking with actors Maurice Parent and Cammy Smith. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And The Mountaintop is presented by the Underground Railway Theater. It's currently on stage at the Central Square Theater in Cambridge through February 3rd. To learn more, visit centralsquaretheater.org. And Kelly Crossley is back in Studio 3 now to close the show.
Thank you all, and thanks for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. I'm Callie Crossley. Have a great afternoon.